It's 19:30 UTC on Monday, December 12th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Money, hey, and breakfast, get a wife and three children here. He's gone to school, he's finished school, he's all right, no problem, yeah.
That was Zimbabwean Mike Dube, a gardener in Johannesburg, talking about his life there and why he is not in a hurry to return to his homeland. We'll have that story and more coming up.
Good evening. I'm Kudzanai Matetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. In Zimbabwe, there's a rising concern over the continued presence of soldiers on Harare streets, 3 weeks after the military first acted to push former President Robert Mugabe out of office. There are several reports, including some video clips, of soldiers allegedly turning violent towards citizens. While the reports cannot be independently verified, they are subject to considerable debate in Zimbabwe. Evans Zininga from our VOA Zimbabwe service has been following the story and joins us in Studio 22 to give us some details. Welcome, Evans.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good, good. So, what are some of the things you're hearing about these reports?
It's very interesting that it's been 3 weeks now since the supposedly very quiet and violent-free transition went through, but the presence of the military on the streets has been increasing, and talking to people on the ground, they hear a very different kind of understanding about the whole thing. But of biggest note is the violence they are talking about. Verified or not verified, the fact that some people are talking about it from military personnel that are supposed to be keeping peace, law and order, that's worrying.
That's very true. But in terms of the military being on the street, does this mean that they're going to, and the increased presence of the military on the street, does this mean they're going to increase the presence? Are they going to relinquish power and let the police take over? Or is this just going to be how it is?
I think it's too early to tell exactly where this is headed at, because if you probably remember, the military literally did a quiet takeover mm-hmm. of everything mm-hmm. for a period. And the police were off the roads, they were off everything, their systems were shut down, and the military was literally controlling everything mm-hmm. until the swearing in of the new president. And ever since then, we have witnessed where situations where the military is accompanying the police, the local municipal officers, to various key specific job assignments, which kind of senses that the military is watching over every little move by the police, every little bit of job done by the police. So we can't really tell if this is now going to be a norm, or is it a subtle confirmation of military rule? Is it still the process of transition? You know, there are so many questions that could be asked about that.
From what you're hearing and reading, are people, you know, filing any type of incident reports, or is there any type of documentation of, you know, the said violence going on?
Yes, there has been a few confirmed reports where the military literally came in and gave an apology and confirmed arrest and you know, action being taken against the supposedly soldiers who did that. So there has been reports that are confirmed about that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us in the studio, Evan.
You're welcome.
Many Zimbabweans are increasingly critical of the military presence in Harare. The soldiers who continue to patrol the streets are being accused of violating people's rights. Many citizens have questioned why soldiers have not returned to the barracks. Here are some of their comments.
Etenba Nube says, G40 or not, Zim soldiers have always been a violent lot. It is part of the nature and character to act just as they did. The real reason why people celebrated with them during the coup was that they were peaceful towards civilians, and that was a shock.
Well C says, soldiers against Zim people now. Getting interesting and reality will prevail. We will get to the bottom of this.
Heather says, we are all for developing our beloved Zimbabwe, but please warn the soldiers to behave. As citizens, we want to partake in the new Zim, but their brutality cannot be ignored.
Lakmo Chibaro says, if we are a united Zim, let us march to ZDF headquarters against harassment by soldiers. General Chiwenga must give us answers as to why soldiers are behaving like this. We didn't march against Mugabe to pave the way for the army to harass us.
However, many people caution calm over the allegations. Zimbo Gardner says, we are none the wiser to what the context of the story is for the soldier to behave in such behavior. Irrespective violence in any form should be condemned, but equally, let's not tarnish the good work of plenty on the overzealous actions of a minority. After all, these soldiers are our brothers, sisters, sons, and daughters.
Zimbabweans have expressed mixed feelings over the role that former President Robert Mugabe's wife played in his downfall. Patricia Mudarigwa reports from Harare on the different views.
Political power grabber or just another match to a burning fire? Those are just some of the opinions Zimbabweans have about former First Lady Grace Mugabe. Tinashe Mawere is a researcher in the Department of Historical and Heritage Studies and Center for Sexualities, AIDS and Gender at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. He blames Grace Mugabe for widening the factional fights in ZANU-PF. Mawere says Mrs. Mugabe had usurped the powers of the president, although she was just a wife, and that was a major contributor to the fall of Robert Mugabe.
She clearly had control over Mugabe, and therefore made certain decisions in favor of Generation 40 group. So, in this case, she is actually seen as usurping the powers of the president. She had actually become the de facto president of the nation.
Mawere says Grace should also answer to the accusations. Political activist and aspiring independent member of parliament for 2018, Linda Masarira, also blames Mrs. Mugabe for her husband's ouster. Masarira thinks the president fell because his wife had encroached onto political territory that was not hers.
Grace Mugabe played a major role in the downfall of Mugabe because she was encroaching into territory that is not hers. She was only a first lady and not the president of this country. But she had assumed roles of appointing and removing ministers. She had taken a role of wanting to take charge of Zimbabwe, which was very wrong because she was not the elected president of Zimbabwe. So for me, I think she took advantage of the president's old age and she wanted to take over as she was the president's wife, which was actually what led to the downfall of Mugabe.
Masarira suggests that Grace Mugabe should be brought before the courts to answer charges that she displaced other citizens and was involved in corruption. Hillian Sibanda is a ZANU-PF member of parliament for Ngulumane and Bulawayo. Sibanda says President Mugabe was a good man who married an ambitious woman. However, there are others who believe that the former president caused his own downfall. Acting director for the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Vekezela Gombo, says Mrs. Mugabe merely added on to a sinking boat. Gombo says that Robert Mugabe had already developed strained relationships with the security sector, which he adds is the backbone of ZANU-PF.
So at the time you lose favor, you fall from security sector grace, you also lose power. Robert Mugabe has created those strained relations with the key leaders of the security sector. And loyal to the security sector, it already started gravitating towards Emmerson Mnangagwa. So now Grace was, we can call it, she added more weight on a sinking boat.
This was supported by Sibonwe Kuhle-Polongu, a gender activist who thinks the fire had already started burning around the president before Mrs. Mugabe started making political waves.
The president himself contributed immensely to his own downfall. Grace only played a minor role, according to me. All she did was to put petrol in a fire that was already burning. So she played a lesser role, and yes, effectively she did contribute, but not that she was the major factor to the downfall of her husband, no.
Polongo thinks it is not necessary for Mrs. Mugabe to be punished. She asserts that no form of punishment would compensate those hit by the former first lady.
I think it's, for me, it's spilled milk. Even if anything is done to her, it just doesn't compensate the damage that she caused to the people of Zimbabwe.
Women rights activist Lucy Makaza Mazingi says Mrs. Mugabe was a victim of men around her who used her.
There were men around Grace Mugabe who had interests, who had political interests, and they were using her in a way to make sure that they get power. It's all about power. It was all about power. And in politics, it's all about power and interest. And I think Grace Mugabe did not realize that.
Grace Mugabe was known for her rantings at every party gathering. She has also been accused of pushing former Vice President Joyce Mujuru out of ZANU-PF. She also belittled government officials, including former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is now the president through the help of the army. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
Zimbabwe's opposition parties have long been seen as weak and unable to drive change in the country. Some opposition leaders say they need to find ways to change that perception. VOA reporter Gandri Maramba in Masvingo spoke to opposition leaders about their efforts to build support ahead of next year's national election. Edison Dube of United Mutare Residents and Ratepayers Trust says the opposition parties should come together and form a coalition. Dube also says that having separate parties will not help prevent violence and intimidation of Zimbabwean citizens during the upcoming election. The U.S. State Department and several international rights agencies say that widespread government-backed violence aimed at voters meant the 2008 election was not free or fair. Critics of the ruling ZANU-PF party worry that with no strong opposition, there could be similar acts of voter intimidation next year. It's especially a worry now, they say, given the military's action to force out former President Robert Mugabe last month and its role in President Emmerson Mnangagwa's new cabinet. Tine Mapingure from Masvingo Human Rights Watch says that nothing good happens when soldiers get involved in politics. He also says that since the current government was put in place by the military, there is a much higher chance of violence considering what happened in 2008.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidondrede in Washington. At 43 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's political change.
Organizations working with Zimbabwean migrants in South Africa say the main reason that most are choosing to remain in their affluent more affluent neighbor is job opportunities. The African Center for Migration and Society in Johannesburg, for example, says Zimbabweans will only begin returning to the country of their birth in big numbers once the economy there improves dramatically. An estimated 2 million Zimbabweans now live in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Grass flies as a burly man in a blue overall soaked with sweat mows the lawn at a house in a Johannesburg suburb. Mike Dube arrived in the city from Bulawayo with his family 15 years ago. Groups protecting the rights of Zimbabweans in South Africa say most of the migrants are employed informally, for example as farm laborers. in the cities, many Zimbabwean men, like Dube, work as gardeners. He says he likes working outdoors, even though it's tough physical labor.
Cleaning, digging, taking the waste out, and cleaning the swimming pool.
Dube says he's heard stories about South Africans paying Zimbabweans so-called slave wages. But he says South Africa and its people have been good to him since he started work in Johannesburg 15 years ago.
I'm getting lunch, money, and breakfast, get a wife and three children here. He's gone to school, he's finished school, he's all right, no problem, yeah.
He says his family had no choice but to leave Bulawayo.
It's very bad because sometimes it's short for food, no money to pay everything, school. If he is going to the clinic, can't find the medicine. Other people is dying in everything.
In South Africa, his family is doing well. Dube and his two sons are gardeners. His wife's a domestic helper, and his daughter's a trainee chef. He says these jobs, as menial as they are hard to come by in Zimbabwe. But Dube insists he still loves Zimbabwe and returns regularly.
Every year, June, I'm going to Zimbabwe. In December, you see you like family. Then I'm coming back.
Packing leaves in a plastic bag, he says it's Zimbabwe's poor economy and lack of development that always disappoint him.
No, it's worse. It's worse, worse, worse. But yes, it's better because you get everything here. And then you get money to send to Zimbabwe to buy some milling. Every month, send money there.
Dube says most Zimbabweans he speaks with about the recent political changes in their homeland have the same opinion as he does.
If Mugabe was out, I'm happy. Because Mugabe, he don't care about the people. Otherwise, he's changed a little bit.
As he trims another patch of grass, Dube laughs and says he won't return to Zimbabwe because he doesn't trust crocodiles. The joke's aimed at the country's new leader, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's nicknamed the Crocodile for his political ruthlessness. Dube says if Mnangagwa proves to be as dedicated to improving all Zimbabweans' lives as he is to his political career, then maybe a move back to Bulawayo will be more than just a dream. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The UN Children's Fund says the explosion of digital technology and growing internet access holds both benefits and risks for children. UNICEF's annual State of the World's Children report explores ways to protect children from the potential harm of the expanding digital world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund reports 1 in 3 internet users around the world is a child. Despite this huge and growing online presence, UNICEF says little is known about the impact of digital technology on children's well-being, and little is being done to protect them from the perils of the digital world. UNICEF's Director of Data Research and Policy, Lawrence Chandy, tells VOA the internet can be a game changer for children.
We sincerely believe that especially for kids in places where opportunities are few or for children who are disabled, live in remote places, it's completely intuitive that the internet has enormous potential and is already helping children access opportunity that just wasn't conceivable not long ago.
At the same time, he says the internet poses many risks. These include the misuse of children's private information, access to harmful content, and cyberbullying. Chandy says criminal digital networks make children vulnerable to some of the worst forms of exploitation and abuse, including trafficking and online child sexual abuse. He says safeguarding children's privacy on the internet is an issue of major concern.
We're really emphasizing the importance of putting in place safeguards to prevent children's personal data from falling in wrong people's hands and protecting their identities. This is an issue which is only going to grow in importance.
While the risks are great, Chandy criticizes businesses and regulators for doing little to reduce the dangers. The report finds millions of children are still missing out on the benefits offered by the Internet. It notes around one-third of the world's youth, most in developing countries, are not online. It calls for these inequities to be addressed. It says children everywhere must be given the opportunity to participate in an increasingly digital economy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
France has ordered a major international recall of several baby formula milk and baby food products made by the French dairy giant Lactalis after the detection of salmonella bacteria in some items. The French Ministry of the Economy ordered the suspension of marketing and export of several infant nutrition products manufactured since February 15, 2017 at the Lactalis factory in Crayon. The French Consumer Protection Agency said that Lactalis had not managed the contamination risk since 26 cases of the illness were first reported. The recall includes products for export to markets in Africa, Asia, Europe, and Latin America.
Two recent studies report successes for highly promising genetic strategies against malaria. Researchers at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health Malaria Research Institute says one of the strategies used a genetic modification to the mosquito to suppress malaria parasites. And to the researchers' surprise, the effects spread quickly in a test population because this genetic modification also changed the mosquito's mating preferences. The studies were published in the journal Science. George Demopoulos is a professor with the Johns Hopkins Malaria Research Institute in Baltimore, Maryland. He's also a lead researcher on the study. He spoke with me about the findings.
My laboratory has been studying the mosquito's innate immune system for many years, and we have been interested in understanding how mosquitoes can fight infections with pathogens such as malaria. And we discovered certain genes in the mosquito that were involved in this fight against the malaria parasite, and that when you would activate this immune system through those genes, the mosquitoes would become more resistant to infection. So after that discovery, we decided to look into the possibility of genetically modifying mosquitoes that would have a stronger immune system and thereby be better at fighting the parasite. We created several genetically modified mosquito strains that would turn on this anti-malarial immune system in their gut tissue and in other tissues after a blood meal. So mosquitoes, they feed on blood in order to produce eggs. Through that blood, they acquire the malaria parasite. So when they would ingest the malaria parasite with the blood, these transgenic mosquitoes, they would turn on their immune system, so they would be better at fighting off infection. And indeed, these mosquitoes proved to be more resistant to infection with a malaria parasite. We thought perhaps this could one day evolve into a malaria control strategy.
When you were describing the actual modification, so you were talking about actually modifying the DNA of the mosquito?
Yes, that's correct. So one unique aspect of this approach we took to modify the mosquito genetically was that we don't introduce a foreign gene into the mosquito. So this mosquito does not have anything foreign. We didn't really change its DNA in a profound way. The only thing we did was to change the timing by which a certain gene in the mosquito was turned on. So genes are turned on and off depending on when they're needed in the DNA. So we just changed a fairly small element in the DNA to make a gene turn on after the mosquito feeds on blood. Its own gene, not a foreign gene. So although these mosquitoes are genetically modified, the genetic modification could be considered to be quite subtle.
In terms of trying to control the spread of malaria, say, for example, in Africa, where it
yes.
is very prevalent there, so would these mosquitoes be released in African countries?
Well, not these mosquitoes that we have developed, but perhaps mosquitoes that have been similarly genetically modified. We're still working on optimizing this approach. Before any releases could happen, we we would have to perform a series of semi-field and laboratory testing of these mosquitoes for a variety of parameters to make sure that the application would be safe, although I cannot think of anything that would go terribly wrong with this approach. And we would obviously also have to obtain approval from various authorities and entities for this kind of approach. So this is not something that's going to happen in the next year or not even perhaps in the next 5 years. It's going to take a while until we get this to work. However, because this strategy of releasing malaria parasite-resistant mosquitoes has some profound advantages, we still think it's worth investing in it and working on this, because if you can get this to work, you could end up having a malaria control strategy that is logistically not very complex, and it could be a self-propagating malaria control strategy, meaning you could release a certain number of mosquitoes and they would spread the resistance gene in the natural mosquito population and gradually convert mosquitoes to resistant for the malaria parasite and thereby not able to transmit the disease.
George Demopoulos is a professor at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health's Malaria Research Institute. He spoke with Kim Lewis from Baltimore, Maryland.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website. We leave you now with Davido's new song, Fire.
Give me love, make a love. There's no other one above.
Shawty want $1 million. They make a wire, wire. Don't need to wanna cover my girl. He tell all our friends, leave me la vida loca. Before you need my love, oh. Yeah, you go there for me. You go there. Money, hide your face,
hide my face.
Make another man picking on my way.
I love you, no mistake. If you say, make a put one and put fire, 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 fire. I go pull up for fire. You know me, say, if you say, make a put one.
Kilokosio, Shuku Jeka, Ayatumeka, Caroline, save your drama. I don't need it, for a top of Rao. Hola, hola, Mita Lopa. I'm not yet to Kokwala. Hello, Diva, save your drama. You don't need me, you're so far.
Yeah, you for there for me.
You for there.
When you find the hunger, I'm gonna die for you.
Oh, but you say if you don't get money, hide your face. Make another man picking on my way.
I love you, no mistake. If you say, make a put one up for fire, 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 fire. I go pull up for fire. You know me, say, if you say, make a put one like for fire, 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 fire. I go pull like for fire.
Give me love, make a love. Make no other one above.
Yeah, you for there for me.
You for there.
When you find the hunger, I'm gonna die for you.
Oh. But you say if you don't get money, hide your face,
hide my face.
Make another man picking on my way.
I love you, no mistake. If you say make a
put one.